Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today. So let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's radio show. I'm Pat Sloan, and it's going to be a great, great hour of talking quilts and just fun stuff. So the first guest that I have is Rebecca Silbaugh, and she's going to chat with me about scrappy quilts, because I just adore scrappy quilts. Hi, Rebecca. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And you?
I am great. I am just excited to talk quilts today.
Well, who wouldn't be, right?
I know. It's our life, isn't it? Quilts.
Just a little.
Well, now you have a new book called Seems Like Scrappy, and I love the concept because you're using pre-cuts to start these quilts. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, I love the idea of scrappy quilts, but not everyone has a stash, or, you know, sometimes it's just you don't have the right colors you have in mind, and that's where the pre-cuts come in handy, because you can get the variety of fabric without having to purchase a lot of individual fabrics. You get that nice variety plus most of the cutting's done for you. So it's a really easy way to kind of get your feet wet and try a scrappy style without the need for an entire stash or a lot of extra fabric.
So tell me a little bit about how you see a scrappy quilt. Like, what is your You know, why do you love them? What is the part that makes you really like a scrappy quilt?
For me, the scrappy quilts are – there's a lot more personality that can go into them. And for me, anything that could use two fabrics, but you use 10, that's scrappy. Or, you know, I have some that I've used over 100 different fabrics in them. And with that, then there's a lot more freedom to it. And it's a lot more, it makes the whole process more enjoyable for me, because then you're not worrying about matching things up perfectly, and you can, because we all have done it where, you know, maybe we cut things the wrong way, or we decided as we're halfway through the project we wanted to make the quilt bigger, you can always add in more fabrics and it doesn't look like you ran out of stuff and had to add stuff in later. So you can really kind of play up and especially with some of those fabrics that everybody gets and they love and have no clue what to do, but you love it and you cherish it, then, you know, you can sprinkle those throughout stuff and put them in a few different quilts. And then that way, then you get to enjoy them a little bit more than just that little piece that's sitting on your shelf that you're afraid to cut.
That is so true. I'm just going to take one quick second here, Rebecca, to tell people what pre-cuts are, because some people may not realize that. They are things that you would buy already cut. I mean, that sounds, you know, obvious, but it would be like fat quarter bundles, charm packs, jelly rolls, layer cakes. There's triangle units. There's little rectangle units. So out in the market, when you go into a quilt shop, you're going to find a ton of these things that are already made. So that's what you're talking about, right? Yeah, so that's – okay. Got one little suck here. We got a little blip, so that's what she has in the book. So we're going to go through and talk a little bit about how to use the pre-cuts in her book, because what I want to find out is about storage and some of the other things. We're trying to get the part just fixed up here for everybody to listen to. One of the quilts that Rebecca has done in her quilt is like a chain, and it has basket units. And if you've come on my website, Creative Talk, you can see the other version that she did. She did a gorgeous version in the book that's all neutrals with red, and then on my website, she shared a picture with me of one that she did all with blue tones and just gorgeous, totally different, because the blues end up being, there's so many shades, and then she did all the neutral backgrounds that they actually are a little bit more blendy than the red and cream. The red and cream are really crisp, and the other one is more watery and really, really gorgeous. Now, the other thing that Rebecca has out on her website is, when I was talking about the pre-cuts, she actually has a form that we can use. So, Rebecca, tell me a little bit about the form or the little document you have called What's in a Name, because pre-cuts aren't the same across manufacturers.
No, they're not. And it's very confusing, because I had a lot of people, either at shows or in classes, go, well, I don't have a charm pack, but I have, you know, X, I have this instead. And it was right. The exact same thing. So, it's basically, that's where it comes down to between the manufacturers and trying to differentiate themselves and copyrights, trademarks, and all that wonderful fun stuff. They assigned different names. And it got very confusing, so I went through and picked basically your 5-inch and 10-inch squares and your 2.5-inch strips. So most people would know those as charm packs, layer cakes, and jelly rolls, and found out the different manufacturers and what they actually refer to them as. So if you're reading a pattern and it calls for jelly roll, but you have a designer roll or, something like that where it's really the same thing, it's just called something different, then it's kind of a little cheat sheet for you. So you've got all that information in one spot.
Is that on your tutorial page at rubybluequilts.blogspot.com? Okay. All righty. Tell me how you do your storage, because I think storage for scraps, like if you made a jelly roll quilt, something with a jelly roll, and then you have extras, what do you do to keep those?
It took me, honestly, a very, very, very long time to come up with a solution that I like, because I do use a lot of the pre-cuts and the pieces, and I wanted to have things done by size, but I still wanted to have things by color. So basically what I've come down to is, if it's yardage, which I can still cut multiple strips from, or if it's basically bigger than a fat quarter, then I keep those in bins that are all separated by color. And all of my bins are clear bins, so I can see exactly what's in each one. And then I broke them down, and I have smaller bins that I broke into, because I'm crazy and I keep anything basically an inch and a half or a little bit less, basically inch and a half to three quarters, because those little string quilts are just fun. So I have basically strings thrown in one. And then each other bin that I have, I keep squares, if I can have squares, or long strips if there's enough left of the strip. And I keep them from basically each half size. So 1.5, 2-inch, 2.5, 3-inch, on up to 5-inch squares. So then I was working it out last night. I was trying to pull some things, and I needed some squares needed to be 5-inch, and some could be 3 or 4-inch or less. And so I started in my pieces, and they were already cut, and I could just go through there and pick out what colors I needed without having to dig through oodles and oodles of amounts of yardage and try and find these little bitty pieces in between. So it's worked out pretty well thus far. Granted, it's always, a system that could use a little tweaking, or the main thing is, that laundry basket that I have of stuff that needs to be tended to and then separated and organized is kind of growing, and I need to tackle on that. But
they do grow fast, those little bits and pieces, when you're making a project. So you just throw them in a laundry basket.
Yes. Yeah, I found it was the easiest way.
Mm-hmm. I want to switch gears just one second, because you see a lot of quilts, because you quilt for other people.
I do.
How do you stay motivated? I mean, most of us who are, even me, I make mostly my quilts. I don't have other people's stuff coming in for me visually to see all the time. How do you keep excited about quilting? By, does that inspire you or what?
Working on other people's quilts is a fun, refreshing challenge from time to time, especially because I never know what I'm going to get and what I could be working on. Mm-hmm. So, in 1 week, I did I think, a graduation quilt, a wedding quilt, some Christmas quilts, and a couple Asian panels. So everything was opposite ends of the spectrum. So I constantly kind of have to keep on my toes and keep thinking of new things and keep thinking in new ways. And it is refreshing and it's fun because then for me, because I don't have the stash or the time to make all these quilts that I, granted, they add to my bucket list quite extensively from time to time. But, you know, then I get to live vicariously through everyone else's quilts for even just a little bit. So some of them, it's, especially with the scrappy quilts as I'm working on it, those never get old because I'm constantly looking at the different fabrics and it's like, ooh, I have that one or I have that one in a different color. Or where did that fabric come from? So there's things like that that are fun. But then certain more intricate quilts that I really have to challenge myself to come up with new ideas, fresh ideas, especially show quilts or quilts that require a lot more custom quilting. Those really kind of work a different part of my brain in trying to come up with new ideas and something fresh and something unique because everyone wants their quilt to, you know, be better than everyone else's.
But, well, it is fascinating. I've never really done that. So, you know, that whole part of a business is just fascinating to me to be, you know, working on other people's. Now, you also have a project in American Patchwork and Quilting's August 2015 issue, and it's a cover girl.
It is. I'm so excited.
Yes. That's called Color Cubes. And that's kind of scrappy too, right?
Yes, but it's funny because it's when I finished the blocks and finished the top, even though it's scrappy because I think there's 21 different fabrics in each block, but it's a lot of fun. They're all exactly the same, and it has been years. I can't even tell you the last time I made a quilt where every single block was exactly the same. So it was kind of different for me for a change.
So it was very controlled, very controlled. So
yes.
Rebecca, this has been a lot of fun. I want people to go look for your book. Seems like Scrappy, The Look You Love with Fat Quarters and Pre-Cuts. And you show a lot of things out on your website. Tell us your website again.
It's rubybluequiltwithans.blogspot.com.
Yeah, and they can find you sharing quilts of your customers plus your own quilts, right?
Correct. Yes, I show all sorts of, it's basically a little bit of everything, even some recipes and some pictures of my dog.
Oh, there you go. Thank you, Rebecca. This has been great.
Well, thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks. We'll be back right after the message.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have Lee Monroe, who writes and quilts and teaches at the website maychappelle.com. And we're going to talk a bit about her tutorials and some other fun things. So, hi, Lee. How are you?
Doing, Pat.
I'm wonderful, and I have to tell you, I may have called you May once because your website's called May Chappelle. So
well,
who is May?
It happens a lot.
Yeah, who is May?
May Chappell was actually my great grandmother, and mm-hmm. I liked the idea of naming my business for her because she had taught my grandmother to quilt, and my grandmother taught my mother, and my mother taught me. So I liked the idea of kind of it passing through generations.
Oh, that is wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I love the history part when you can connect with your family like that, and that's really cool. So you like to teach. You do a lot of tutorials on your website. How did you start sort of getting interested in sharing like that?
Well, I actually kind of got into the whole teaching and pattern writing gig through teaching. My local quilt shop had asked me to teach a class on color mm-hmm. because I had an art background, and so it kind of all grew from that. And I just really love, I'm very passionate about sewing and quilting, and I love passing that on to other people. And it's just been it's a really great experience. Oftentimes I'm more proud of what my students have made than what I've made because I feel like a huge sense of pride when they finish something and they're excited about it. And I've passed on something that I love to them.
So when you started your website, did you start sharing your tutorials right away? Because you do that a lot.
I did. Mm-hmm. I kind of, you know, I would make something, and I just liked the idea of kind of taking a picture of my process. I'm a really detail-oriented person, and I think there's a lot of tutorials out there, but I kind of wanted to be able to share the way that I do it and the kind of my process.
Yeah, I love that you and I were talking, and you said that you really have a great quote that you use and you like from Picasso. Can you tell me that one?
I do. It's mm-hmm. Learn the rules like a pro so you can break them like an artist.
And oh, that's kind so of, good.
Yeah, that's kind of how I like to live my life. Like, I like mm-hmm. to know the right way to do it and mm-hmm. kind of master the craft and mm-hmm. then take that and throw it out the window and do it in a whole new way and a new idea.
Yeah, I think that nowadays a lot of people don't really understand block construction because they learn to quilt in a different way and back in the day, I mean, I had to learn block construction in order to make a quilt. That was just how things were taught. Now we can come in and just cut and sew and have fun, and there isn't always that sort of background being done. You love drafting, right?
I do. And I always encourage my students, and especially in beginning quilting, I make them start out with graph paper, and mm-hmm. I kind of talk about the basics. I always think of quilt blocks as either being 3 6s and 9s or 2 4s and 8s. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, you know, talk about, like, even if you're not good at math, everyone can divide 8 by 4 and get 2. And right. So we can always, you know, kind of go back to the basics. Mm-hmm. And I just set them out with graph paper and start drafting different shapes. And basically anything you can draw on graph paper, you can easily construct into a quilt. Mm-hmm. And I think that really empowers students if it's their own design and they're kind of creating something that's uniquely theirs.
So you, for your own pattern writing, tell me a little bit about your process for your quilts.
I usually start out, I do most of my stuff by hand. I always start out by hand, and I do draw on graph paper. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I'll sketch a shape that I'm really interested in. Like my latest pattern, Hattie's Dresden, I kind of took a Dresden block and elongated it, and I sketched mm-hmm. it out on paper, and then it was kind of, I worked backwards to figure out how to make it, because I knew that there were all these angles and all these shapes, but I knew mathematically there had to be some way to make it that would be easy to explain to people, mm-hmm. and a lot of people look at that block and assume it's either paper pieced or it's applique, and, you know, it is pieced the way a traditional Dresden block is, and so I think it's really fun to kind of draw a shape like that and then work backwards and figure out how to make it.
Yeah. That is fun. You're sort of like taking the unit and then fitting it onto the graph paper.
Yes.
Oh.
And, you know, and kind of working that one did kind of, I may have talked to my engineering brother a couple times to work backwards on that one, you know, just because it was, degrees and,
You know, it was a bigger math problem than I'm normally used to. But I like to figure all of my quilts. I always do all the quilting math by hand and kind of figure out the yardages and everything by hand, because I just like kind of the basics of it. You know, I just use a notepad and a pencil and kind of work from there.
Mm-hmm. Do you keep all those things then? Do you store all that?
I do. Oh. I'm a total hoarder. I have every sketch pad since I was a kid.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, Lee, that's fabulous. Yeah, you can go through them.
I know. I could sell those for like a nickel each in 5 years, you know.
All right. All right. I'll be in line for that. So tell me about your Tip Tuesday, because that's a real obvious every Tuesday type event that you host. What do you do?
Well, Tip Tuesday kind of started from teaching. Whenever I teach classes, I always try to make sure that everyone leaves having learned something. So I always fill the class with tons of tips about piecing and tips about tools I like. And so Tip Tuesday kind of came from that. And it's something that I can explain in two photographs and two paragraphs. You know, so it has to be something really quick and easy. It's not a big, long tutorial. It's just something really basic. And a lot of times people will read it and say, I totally knew that. And that's mm-hmm. fine, you know, but if you read that and you didn't know it, mm-hmm. there are usually things that are just super, super helpful, you know.
Right.
One of the ones I wrote was that I label all of my solids when I buy them. I just write my own selvage. So I'll put Moda Bella, you know, and whatever the number is, and like make a little selvage. And a ton of quilters do that. I don't at all think I'm the first person to think of that. Mm-hmm. But if you don't do that, that is really helpful to you, you know? And so those kinds of things are what become Tip Tuesdays. You know, they're always just really quick and easy tips that make quilting easier, you know?
I didn't know that one.
There you go.
I know. I'm like writing a note down.
I do the same with all of my interfacings. You know, so when I buy an interfacing, especially if it's something I don't use often that I don't immediately know what it is when I pick it up, I'll just write with like a Frixion pen right at the edge what it is.
Perfect. Because I've written
no
it on
more
paper.
Mystery.
And stapled it, you know, but it's easier just to write it on the edge. Oh, yay.
Well, I was always losing those directions. You know how it comes mm-hmm. with the paper directions that are like mm-hmm. tissue paper? I was always losing those. So I just started writing it right on.
So where do you teach, Lee? Do you travel to teach or you teach more local?
I do. I teach a lot all over North Carolina, which is where I'm from. But I also travel to teach, and I love to travel, so I'm completely open to going absolutely anywhere. I love new adventures, and I'll try anything once, and so I think it's really fun when I'm invited to teach somewhere that I've never been.
Mm-hmm. What do you do when you go somewhere you've never been? What is, like, the first thing you want to do?
I want to do what the locals do. Like, I always like to find the, like, restaurant that the locals eat at or – You know, my best friend and I traveled after high school, and we went to Tennessee, and we immediately found this, like, diner that clearly only locals ate at. And the mm-hmm. first night we ate there, someone came up and said, where did y'all come from?
Yeah.
You know, and it was just like, we so clearly did not belong. But I love to, like, meet the locals and say, well, what do you like to do? What are places you love? And it's all the better if I have a friend that lives near there and I can kind of, you know, like, see the city through their eyes.
Mm-hmm. That is a lot of fun. That's funny that they're like, recognize you. You were not local. Who are
Where did you
girls?
Come from? I'm totally open for adventures and travel. So
wonderful. When you, I'm curious, like when you go to a quilt show, you know, we all have a different way of approaching a show. What do you get excited about to go look at?
My favorites are quilts that I can't immediately figure out how they made it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think a lot of pattern designers probably come from that mindset, because mm-hmm. a lot of times I'll look at a quilt and I can immediately kind of break it down and how I would construct it and how the mm-hmm. blocks, you know, like I would make that a square and a square and I would make that flying geese, you know, and they'll kind of break it down. But I love when I see a quilt that I don't know how they made it or mm-hmm. I can't figure out, you know, like how they got the seams to be there. And so I'm a big deconstructor at quilt shows. That's kind of my favorite thing to do.
I had a friend teach me how to do that many, many years ago when we were crafting. But she would stand in front of something, a display somewhere, and just say, this is how that's made. And it really helps you learn how things are made.
It does. Absolutely. And I think, too, sometimes if someone's made something different than how I would, I can learn from that, too. Because there's ways that I would break down a block and make it, and then I'm like, oh, but they did it this way, and then I have to stand there and figure out why they did it that way. Mm-hmm. And there's usually a great reason. You know, sometimes it makes the pressing easier, or sometimes it makes, you know, there be less seams. And so right. I always think it's interesting to kind of look at the way, and I love to construct a block and use the scraps from that block on another mm-hmm. element in the quilt. Mm-hmm. And so I always think it's interesting when, you know, other people do that. Like, oh, this became that they used on the backing.
Ah, yeah. So you spend a lot of time at those quilts when you see them.
I do. No one wants to go to a quilt show with me.
So do you carry a notebook for ideas? I know some people do, but
I carry like 7 because each of the notebooks have to have different purposes.
Oh, well, of course. Yes. Excuse me.
Obviously. No, yes. I always have like a notebook of like written ideas and a notebook of drawn ideas and a notebook of my to-do list. I just got a really funny notebook. I love notebooks. And it says full of great ideas and cunning plans.
Oh,
and
there you go.
Totally me.
There you go. How often do you write on your website, Lee?
I try to blog like maybe 3 or 4 times a week.
Okay.
You know, I kind of do it. I feel like it shouldn't be a duty, that it should be like when I genuinely have something to say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I try to not, you know, but there are times where I'm like, oh, I haven't said anything in a week. I need to write something.
Yeah. Well, this has been so much fun to hear about what you do, and I hope everybody goes out to maychapel.com.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish, learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have Heather Spence here, and I am very excited because I know that a lot of you have been following Heather for many years. She is a designer, a pattern designer. She quilts for others, and she runs a wonderful mystery that is for a charity. And that's where I think a lot of you have met her through the years. And so, Heather, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
You know, tell me a little bit about how you discovered quilt making.
We have my sister to thank for that. she actually took the hobby up long before I did. And then I married an Australian and I moved to Australia. And mm-hmm. when we came back here to the States mm-hmm. as a welcome home gift, she gave me my first mat, rotary cutter and ruler.
Oh, my.
Yeah. We tease her about that sometimes.
Oh, it's all her fault. That's it, huh?
Yes.
So was she your only quilt maker in the family?
Yes. In my family, there is a tradition of handwork. I actually have some little doilies that a great grandma had crocheted, but there has not been anyone who's made quilts.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't have any quilt makers in my family either, so I was the first. I didn't buy anybody a mat, though, and a rotary cutter yet. Maybe I have to think about that.
It was very generous of her.
She needed someone to quilt with. That's
apparently. And the ironic thing is that she doesn't quilt anymore.
Oh, no. Paybacks.
And so...
So what point did you discover long arming? Because, you know, some people never, you know, do that. And there's groups of you that discover it like almost immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was several years after that we had bought a house and there was a quilt shop just up the street. Mm-hmm. And I started working there and they had a long arm that they just used for store use and for friends. Mm-hmm. And I took to long arm quilting like a duck takes to water. Ah. So, yeah. Yes.
So some people are like that. Don't you hear it over and over again that they just get on that machine and it's second nature?
Yes. Yes. Yep. And I have taught long arm quilting classes and there have been people when I can just tell. Mm-hmm. When they touch the machine, they just feel comfortable and their movements are nice and smooth. It's not like they're fighting it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you quilt on a sit-down machine pushing the fabric very much before you switched over?
Well, I started on my domestic machine first, and I quilted so much that I actually broke the first topping foot.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So you did try it out just a bit. That's
Yeah. I actually, when my sister had introduced me, I had started hand quilting. And when you know it takes you 2 weeks to hand quilt a baby quilt, thinking, oh my gosh, there's got to be a faster way to do this.
Yes. Yeah. It's very long. The hand quilt is gorgeous and it gives a totally different look and feel. I'm in awe of hand quilting.
Yes. Totally respect people who do hand quilting. It's an amazing art.
It is. And I'm very talented. People are they're very quick. Some of them, they really speed up with practice, like anything with practice.
Yes.
So the quilts that you make now, I mean, your actual designs and everything, are they the same type of quilts that you made when you first started? Did you change a lot?
Yeah, I think that all people, no matter what they do, our tastes, our experiences, things change us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started off with really pastel-y light colors and a lot of traditional patterns. And I really absorbed a lot of what was going on around me when I worked with other quilters. And in the years, during the years, I have floated more towards the light backgrounds, more modern quilting, maybe not all the way into modern quilting, but I do, my work does reflect a lot of that modern feel. But I really do enjoy taking aspects of the more traditionally pieced blocks and playing with them.
That's neat. We're going to talk a bit more about how you design and think about quilts a little later. Since we get to have a whole half a show to chat, we can talk a little bit more in depth. I'm always interested in how people end up going into the business side of quilt making. Well, it sounds like you worked for the quilt shop for a while. Were you like working the floor, helping people pick fabric and that kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I love that part. And even
That's
though I haven't worked in it is, I was just doing, I was just talking to a group of ladies in May and I said, working with those beautiful fabrics day in and day out, and helping mostly women find what they need, it is just the most happy job. It's so much fun.
Yeah. I've never worked. I may have helped, you know, a little bit here and there, mm-hmm. a friend's shop, but I haven't really done it as a regular job. But I think so many quilters just think it would be a slice of heaven to be able to go and hang out in the quilt shop and pick fabric all day long. It's like,
mm-hmm.
So you're saying yes it is.
Yes, it is. And the only downside is that the vast majority of your paycheck goes to your purchases.
Right. That's right. You work to support your hobby, so.
Yes, exactly. Maybe that's not a downside. Maybe that's a perk.
Yeah, it might not be too bad. So when you started doing the long arming and you loved it, did you know right away you wanted it to be a business, or did that just happen by accident?
Maybe a pleasant accident. Yeah. I was walking home from work one day, and my husband at the time was not making wise life choices. And I was afraid that he wouldn't come home at night for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. And so I was walking down the street one day, and I was praying, and I was talking to God and saying, oh my gosh, Lord, I don't know what to do. I'm scared. I'm frightened. What happens if I need to be able to support my family? Mm-hmm. And then couple days later, the shop owner's daughter called and said, hey, there's this gal that mom works with, and she needs someone to quilt a quilt for her. And I told her you could do it. Wow. I was like, okay. And I did it. And she put cash in my hand. And I was like, that was really fun. Wow. And then someone else asked me, and then mm-hmm. someone else asked me, and then that happened in May. And then by November, I looked at my husband and said, I think I should probably get a business license.
Yeah.
Now I was still quilting on the shop's long arm. And by the springtime, my husband said, we need to buy you a machine.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah,
that's fast. That's how I got my, rolling.
Yeah. And it's actually, I have learned that's not necessarily the best way to start a business. A plan is generally a good idea, but it worked for me.
Yeah. Right. And do you long arm in your home now, or do you have your stuff in another facility?
I work from home. Mm-hmm. The plan is eventually to be in another facility, and to have more long arms that people can come and rent, or I can teach on. But right now, home is where I need to be because I've got my two girls.
Right, right. And a lot of people do this at home. It's a excellent mm-hmm. home-based business, so that mm-hmm. you don't have to be getting up and going somewhere else. So how do you...
Incredibly flexible.
So when you have quilts come to you, I thought we could talk just a little bit until the break about how people should, you know, if they've never sent a quilt to be quilted by somebody else, what are some tips for what they need to look for or think about?
Yeah, that's actually really great. It is something that I deal with and talk with my clients all the time. Mm-hmm. I would say the first thing, especially if you're sending it out, like mailing it away from your local area, mm-hmm. know the quilter that you're sending your quilt to. Be sure you've seen pictures, that you've got references, they have a website, that they're known.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't know what you're getting yourself into, then you know, there's just a lot of gray area there.
Yeah, there's more chance for disappointment if you haven't done your research.
Yes, exactly. And in that process, ask questions like, mm-hmm. how long have you been in business? What are your policies? What is your pricing? How long can I expect my quilt to be away from me? Mm-hmm. Shipping, insurance, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. What about... preparing the quilt then, to be sure that when you receive it, you know, when the person who's going to quilt it for you receives it, that it's in the best condition for you to put it on the long arm, because it's different.
And yes, very different. So the number one tip would be sure that your borders are not ruffling. No wavy borders.
No wavy borders. How should people fix that, Heather?
Well, what I have found to be the best way to eliminate ruffled borders is to measure your quilt top before you put the borders on. Mm-hmm. And the way I do that is I measure the what I call a long seam, which is a seam that runs from end to end closest mm-hmm. to the raw edge of the quilt top. And that will give you a very a more accurate measurement than if you measure the raw edge. Mm-hmm. The raw edge stretches quite a bit, but that mm-hmm. long seam with the thread in there, it doesn't stretch at all.
Okay. And do you measure it in more than one spot?
Yes, the long seam closest to the border that I'm going to be, or the edge that I'm going to be putting the mm-hmm. border on.
Okay.
Because I have found that unless you're a very accurate piecer, mm-hmm. then your top, as an example, the top edge of your quilt and the bottom edge of your quilt could be significantly different. And if you do the traditional way of doing it, of taking the three measurements, top, bottom, and middle, and finding the mm-hmm. average, you could have a border that's too big, significantly too big, and one that's significantly too small.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which can add all sorts of problems. So measuring that long seam, I have found for myself, it works beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. What is one more? We have like about a minute, then we'll take a break. What is one more really important thing people should do or think about for sending quilts away?
Square your backings.
Oh.
And I actually just posted on my blog the other day about how to have nice square backings. And guess what? It is okay to leave your selvages on the top and the bottom of your backings. You don't need to cut those guys off.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people do that, and it's hard to get nice straight lines by cutting it. And those selvages are straight.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point, because they are. They've been holding the fabric as it goes through the manufacturing process. So,
mm-hmm.
And it's excellent, excellent. These are really, really good tips. And like on your website, which is heatherspencedesigns.com, you have a page for, all the quilting information. So people, and then that's what a lot of people who do this for business have. So you go there and find out all the different mm-hmm. Issues about what to send and how to send. So we have another like 30 seconds or so here, then we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about your mystery quilt. And do you have information on your website about that?
Yes. Yes, I do. On the website, at the top of the menu bar, it says Mystery Quilt, and you can look at the drop-down menu there.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So we're going to be back in a minute after the news here.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm talking with Heather Spence. So, Heather, when did you start your mystery quilt for charity? How long has it been running?
Oh, 5 years now. No, 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So, sorry, go ahead.
Let's go say, just tell me about it. Why did you start it? What is it to support?
My mom in April of 2009 was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And after undergoing two of the best chemo treatments, they sat her down and basically said, listen, we need to do a stem cell transplant or you're going to die. Mm. And of course, there, I'm giving you the super short version.
Right.
But, but she was going to have to do fundraising because with a stem cell transplant, she was going to need 24-hour care for the first 3 months after the transplant. And you don't work. And
right.
Someone else has to stop working to be with you. And in this case, it was my dad. So they were going to need financial help. Even though insurance was really good, they still needed housing near the Seattle Cancer Care Alliance. And mm-hmm. there was transportation and food and, you know, all that stuff we don't think about. So I was thinking of ways that I could help my mom and dad, and I realized, oh, I could do a mystery quilt. I could just write a pattern and break it up into 6 steps, and, mm-hmm. you know, let's just charge $10, and we'll see how much money we can raise. And we had 80 people sign up.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really wonderful. It was really wonderful. And since then, we have raised, I think it's about $20,000. We have helped five individuals, I think it was. And mm-hmm. at that point, I started realizing I can't, it's getting too far away from home. I can't figure out if I can trust these people or not to use the money the way it's supposed to be used. So then I teamed up with an organization called Cancer Care. Mm-hmm. And they do what I was doing, but they can do all of the other stuff that I don't know how to do.
And your mom is healed, right?
Yeah, the stem cell transplant worked. Her cancer is gone, and she is officially no longer considered a transplant patient as well.
Wow, good for her. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you run this once a year, the mystery?
We run it twice a year in
twice
the spring.
A year.
Well, technically 3 times. So I do it in the spring, and that's just through my website. And then mm-hmm. in the fall, we started working with Missouri Star Quilt Company. And shameless plug, we're actually, the next one starts with Missouri Star the first Friday in October.
Okay.
And then I do a shorter version of one mm-hmm. on New Year's Day and try to release clues like every hour, every 2 hours.
Oh.
And those are really fun.
Oh, that sounds like fun. People go crazy for that stuff, right?
Yeah. And the quilters, they're like, I don't really care about football. Then they go and hide in their sewing room.
Perfect solution all around. Yes.
Right.
Well, I wanted to be sure everybody sort of knew that this existed because it's such a great program. And the people that I know have done it have had a wonderful time, and it supports a good cause. So that's mm-hmm. great. That is great. Let's switch mm-hmm. gears a little bit. I want you to tell me about your own quilts because you design quilts. And we were talking about color and style. And you mentioned earlier how you like a little bit of a cleaner look. Tell me your process mm-hmm. for designing quilts.
Oh, my process for designing quilts. I've woken up with an idea in my head. Mm-hmm. I've gotten ideas while driving down the street because I was just thinking about blocks. One day I actually, our double cross, the mystery quilt we just finished, I actually was driving down the street thinking of some blocks, and I had an idea, and I had to pull into the grocery store parking lot and actually draw it out before I forgot. sometimes it happens. I'll be just laying fabrics out, this will be really fun. So, the design process itself just kind of evolves.
Right.
It's different every time. And
That probably is the same for a lot of people, that, you know, it depends on what it is you're making and how you do it. You know, what kind of colors do you like to work with right now? What's kind of your favorite combo?
Oh, kind of all of them. I love color. I love color. Blue is the color that I tend to be most attracted to. Mm-hmm. But really, I love it all.
You love it? Well, you know, I was looking at your Facebook group page the other day and saw this really neat layout that you've been working on for a t-shirt quilt,
yes.
Which has really vibrant colors. The t-shirts have vibrant colors. What are you sort of building that as you go, or
yes, and I wouldn't recommend it. When we went back to Australia in 2012, my sister-in-law gave me her son's rugby jerseys to bring back and make into a quilt. So that's what they are. And he is a small giant.
Mm-hmm.
He's 250 pounds and like 6'5".
Oh, my goodness.
Right. And so the shirts that she gave me really didn't make a quilt big enough for a person that size. So I had to decide how to make this quilt bigger. And 15-inch blocks, black and white, traditionally pieced, just seemed to be the best way to solve that problem.
Mm-hmm. It's really going to be amazing when it's done. It's you've done a nice job cutting portions of the t-shirts out so that it's interesting. It's really interesting.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, is this, you told me that there's something that you like to call interacting with the project. I mean, when you're actually designing and working on a project, what does that mean?
Well, it can mean a variety of things. Because I found that as you're working on a project that, we often all end up with a problem,
mm-hmm.
right? And we have to solve that problem in some way. And it can be as simple as pressing seams.
Mm-hmm.
As a long arm quilter, it is really the bane of our existence when we end up with these points that have so much fabric in them because they've all been pressed to one side, and you've got one side that's got three layers and the other side that's got 12. And
mm-hmm.
our hopping feet and our needles won't quilt that.
Mm-hmm.
They just won't. So pressing seams open versus pressing to the side,
mm-hmm.
you need to consider that. This jersey quilt that I'm working on is a perfect example. Okay, so now I've got these shirts that are all different sizes, and I've cut some of them out smaller than they should have been. Okay, well, how am I going to fix that? And then, okay, now I've got this giant person, so I'm going to make it bigger.
Yeah.
So it's taking the time, slowing down, thinking about, okay, now I have this problem. How am I going to solve this problem? And how is that problem, when I solve that problem, how is it going to affect the project later on?
Mm-hmm.
So.
One of the things then would be like you said, if you're thinking ahead about the next step, actually, at the time that you're
mm-hmm.
constructing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure regular quilters who don't long arm think that, but it's a really great way to think, because when you're sewing on your quilting on your own machine, you're still going to run into all that stuff that's bulky, and you'll leave a big bump, you know, even if you go around it.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you probably even experience those problems more on a domestic machine, because the foot, you have even less space with the foot.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right. And they don't have the power on your domestic machine to go through the layers that the long arm does.
Yes.
Now, another thing mm-hmm. that you have on your website is you have a section with, you told me you have like some tips and things out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where do people find that?
Oh, first of all, it's a brand new website, so I'm still figuring it all out. And most of them right now you can find in the blog. So on the blog, there's a search bar, and you can just type type in whatever you're looking for. And I'm just going to go to it right now. I think the resource, there's nothing on the resources section at the moment, but when I finally get all of that stuff actually written into PDF form, mm-hmm. they will go on the resources page as well.
Okay.
And you
that's
can
good.
Find that by scrolling all the way down to the bottom.
Yeah. Perfect. So tell me, when you go out to American Patchwork and Quilting's websites, to their website, what is your favorite thing to go look at?
The quilt patterns. My favorite part about that is that if there's a particular project that I want to do, like a baby quilt, I can go and I can choose the size that I'd like. And then there's all these different options, like using pre-cuts or is pinwheels, or, you know, there's all these different choices.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of narrows it down for me. I don't have to go out there just looking at a large variety of patterns and wondering, is this really, am I going to be able to make this fit mm-hmm. into what I want?
Yeah, I love that there's choices on things. That always just is perfect. Something we can...
I like choices.
Yes. Now, you have a newsletter, Heather, on your site?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
How often do you send that, you know, like monthly or?
Ideally, I would like to send it once a month. I was actually thinking this morning, oh, I got to send my newsletter. But as I often tell people, my life tends to run away with me. And then I remember, oh, I forgot to do the newsletter this month. So no one needs to be afraid of being bombarded by newsletters from me.
Okay. But when you have a new event going on, that'll be
yes.
a way that it can notify you in your email. So
yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Perfect. So just before we wrap up, do you ever have a chance to go to quilt shows and take a look around?
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like to look at?
Oh, I like to look at the modern quilt because they're so exciting in the way people take designs and interpret them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the use of color. And then the other thing that I like to go and look at is whenever they have antique quilts or they have exhibits based on antique quilts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like that too. I love antique quilts. So, Heather, this has been so much fun. I appreciate
it. Thank you. I really enjoyed myself. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, and I hope a lot of people come and visit you at your website. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit us at allpeoplequilt.com, where you can sign up for the newsletter, which goes out and gives you all those links that Heather liked about the different projects. There's like categories for the quilts, so they'll be themed. So that's what the newsletter is like for American Patchwork Magazine. You can come over and visit me at patsloan.com, sign up for my newsletter, and visit all of us on Facebook, all of my guests today, and the magazine.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.